Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. A couple notes, by the way. There are automatically 17 delegates in Pennsylvania that are committed to the winner of the state, which will be next Tuesday. And as you know, Prince passed away at 57. They found him unresponsive in an elevator at his Paisley Park studio, and they pronounced him dead at 9:45. Of course, 7 Grammy Awards, an Academy Award for the semi-autobiographical Purple Rain, and also they say that in the past 2 weeks he made 4 separate trips to the pharmacy, and they're trying to find out now what he was trying to get there. So we will find, you know, there'll be more details coming out, but obviously in the music world and the entertainment world, the shocking loss of Prince. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day, which you heard right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Scott Fransky with the call. Game winner, Mets.
The stretch by the right-hander, and the 0-2 on the way. Swinging a ground ball, hit deep third, backhand stop right, long throw to first, and it's not in time. The game's over. Phillies win. Peter Borges wins it with an infield single.
Scott Fransky with the call. You heard it right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. It's an off night for the Phillies tonight, then back in action tomorrow.
You know, I was at Saturday's game.
Go ahead. Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. I was just going to say, I was at Saturday's game, and as a Phillies fan, it didn't get much better than that. You got free baseball because it went 10 innings. Wirth made 2 bad plays in extra innings in left field, and Papelbon blew a save, and the Phillies win. It was like the best Sunday in Phillies baseball recent memory.
Now, did you listen to what you just said?
Yeah.
Did you listen to what you just said?
I listened rather closely to it, yeah.
Okay, what didn't you say in there?
I don't know. What didn't I say?
You talked about former Phillies failing, and that made you happy. And
yes, it did.
I'm not done yet. And not one time did you mention a Philadelphia Phillies success.
Well, it was really nice to see Chooch hit a home run, too. And, you know, Galvis hit the double.
But now you're backtracking.
No, I'm not arguing with you. You're right. I enjoyed watching former Phillies fail. Okay.
I mean, Wirth signed the $129 million deal with the Nationals. I mean, there's no look. Do you think in any realistic shape or form the Phillies are going to come up with that kind of money for Jason Wirth? My goodness, it's not Babe Ruth.
No.
All right? I mean, it was the second he signed that with the Nationals, anybody with common sense knew that that was a franchise mistake to make. But what I found interesting is that, listen to you, Papelbon blew the save, and Wirth blew 2 balls in the outfield. It was great. And Phillies won. Right? You didn't talk about a single Philadelphia success. You talked about former Phillies failing, and that made you happy.
Yes, I completely agree with you. That is exactly what made me happy, was to see especially the blown save by Papelbon. That did not break my heart at all. And I think I speak for most of the Phillies fans of the 30-plus thousand that were there. They enjoyed it as well.
I would have enjoyed my team winning.
That's a bonus. That's a bonus. Papelbon blew a save in Philadelphia. I mean, you can't write a script better than that.
I don't know. The Bourne Identity was a good script. All right, let's get to television. You are one interesting guy. a guy that gets higher than a kite on failure than he does on success. All right.
I actually like Worth a little more, much more than Papelbon. So, you know, watching Papelbon blow the save was actually better than watching Worth misplay a couple of balls in the outfield.
I have nowhere to go with this. All right, let's
talk. Oh, come about on. You have no love for Papelbon either, really. I mean, come on.
I don't get attached to this stuff like you do.
Listen, that's the one thing I think Red Sox fans and Phillies fans will have in common. There's not a whole lot of love for Papelbon.
No, except for the fact if you're a Red Sox fan, in 2007, he saved three games of the World Series in a row.
I'd forgotten about that. That's a good point.
I mean, and that's why, for example, when you've talked about Ken Giles, how do they give up Ken Giles? And I said, look, there's nothing to save. I said, you know, trade him for something else. Closers are a dime a dozen right now. Throw out Mariano Rivera. Please, okay, that is the exception to all exceptions. Okay. Who's been the closer for the three Giants championships? It's all changed. They're all different. Okay, who's the closer for the three Red Sox championships? Now remember, three Red Sox championships in a span of 10 seasons. Keith Foulke in 4, Papelbon in 7, Koji Uehara in 13. All different guys. Who are the closers for the Cardinals when they won the World Series? Different guys. So don't get all hepped up about, oh my goodness, they lost Ken Giles, they lost their closer. You could come up with closers that have a nice like 2-3 year shelf life for you.
It was still fun watching him blow the save.
Oh my goodness. What's more fun, when Shikellamy wins the football game or some kid in the other team?
No. See, that doesn't compare because that's high school sports. These are guys that are getting paid to play. So that's the element there.
But again, in Jersey Shore, they don't like you. Because, I mean, you've ripped that program.
Listen,
all right,
I get good comments from the folks at Jersey Shore. I don't know where you get this from.
I remember the week of the game. You just kept putting them down and putting them down 2 years ago. And they've never done this. They've never done that. And, of course, you know.
I can't say that anymore because now they have.
Then you learned a valuable lesson that every year is different. All right. So let's bring in Steve Samsel. Now, Steve, 6-year, $1.5 billion. That's what's reported that they're on the verge of signing between Fox, which includes FS1, and the Big Ten for 25 football games, 50 basketball games, Tier 1 rights. What was your reaction when you saw that?
It looks and sounds like a big number. I mean, it's a lot of money. I mean, it's more than doubling what they were doing with ESPN. So that was my first thought, was, wow, that's a lot of money. And then it's only the Tier 1 piece of it, so there's more to come. And there's a lot of different pieces to it, though, as I was looking at it. I mean, you know, Fox did cuts earlier this year, and one of the numbers they were talking about saving the company was $250 million by their cuts. So that equals a year. And then the 6 years puts the Big Ten in an interesting position when some other rights fees end again. You know, it's a shorter deal, but it's a savvy shorter deal, it looks like. And then on the other side, the Fox and Fox Sports One piece, you know, as somebody who watches games, I really don't think there is a big difference between how networks produce their games, but I do think that if there's a network that steals at the bottom in terms of how they do college football, or at least that I feel seems lesser to me, it's Fox and Fox's game. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, how consumers find the channels again, you know, when it kicks in next fall and all those kind of things. It's lots of fun nuances.
Give me the importance from a Fox point of view to get the Big Ten footprint as a potentially reliable base for fans to go to.
Yeah, I mean, it's content. I mean, and that footprint in terms of some good markets in the Midwest, I mean, I think Penn State is always going to be the New York team, even though the Big Ten did Rutgers a few years ago to say they were coming east. I think that market was a Penn State market beforehand. But I think getting that Big Ten footprint, getting those brand names, getting some, I mean, they've got a lot of other rights, but getting a rights package that matters, not the other ones don't, but another one that matters and gives them, you know, a lot of content. I think that's the other important piece, is just, they have some live programming to show, and while people may be cutting their cable cord, you know, they're still live programming has some cachet, and even if they're viewing it mobile with Fox Sports to go or whatever else it may be, there's something there live to watch, and that, there's something to be said for that.
The section in the Big Ten that has some discomfort at the moment are Big Ten basketball coaches. They have made it very plain to Jim Delaney that they want to have some sort of ESPN presence, and the numbers are the reason why. Big East basketball, albeit no UConn, no Syracuse, no Louisville, no Notre Dame, and then no Pitt, drew an average of 96,000 viewers this past season in a conference that included the eventual national champion Villanova. Meanwhile, the Big Ten averaged 1.2 million on ESPN. So what level of importance do you put on the next part of the package, including ESPN?
I think they have to have a piece of ESPN. I mean, one of the headlines I saw somewhere that, you know, ESPN had a non-competitive bid for the first part. It was just a headline. I didn't get a chance to read more of it. But, yeah, I think you have to be there almost to exist. I mean, as much as content is traded and shared and people can find it and the highlights are all there, I do think there's a correlation between being able to be found and be respected by being on that ESPN, being ESPN's broader reach. And it's interesting that, you know, Jim Delaney has negotiated, from what I understand, most of his contract himself, and I'm sure the coaches have his ear. And I think the other piece that I haven't looked up yet and I hope to do this weekend is, and it may not matter as much because they didn't have the Big Ten then, but it'll be interesting to see how many College Game Day locations for ESPN have been non-ESPN or ABC games in the past few years. My sense would be not many. So it'll be interesting from the football standpoint, not that they're not going to go to big games, and I know they do go to big games that they don't own, but it's a lot easier to do your own stuff.
I think what you'll find is some of those are SEC games that are on CBS, yep, but they have the SEC network.
Exactly.
Right. Yep. Now, the next part of this, Turner and CBS have partnered, and now it's extended through 2032, because CBS knew they couldn't outbid ESPN for the NCAA tournament. So they partnered with Turner. That gave them the extra cash. They did it. Is it possible, Steve, that ESPN partners with somebody to come up with the necessary money to make this happen? Because it is being alleged that ESPN's top-out number was $150 million.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a shock. I mean, we've kind of ebbed and flowed through the years with media rights and everything. You know, people wanting to protect just their own and act on their own, and now you're seeing more partnerships, and I think that's the way it's going to work. And there's a part of us, you know, you'll talk about, well, will fans be able to find the game? And I'm sure there was slight confusion with the team cast at the Final Four, you know, of whether they're watching the team broadcast, the national, and they can't find the right one. But with network guides now and things like that, I think people do find games, and I'm not sure fans are really as aware of who's broadcasting the game all the time. So I think as long as they can get the games out there, I think those partnerships that allow you to get some of that content and even own a piece of it, a smaller piece, might be a route that networks go.
Yeah, because that's something that's being speculated. It's a possibility where that could make up the other $100 million, so it balances out at $250 and $250, which is what they're looking to, I think, eventually do here.
Yeah, and apparently that's not, that was, they had higher hopes for higher numbers. So it's just interesting, you know, what's out there. And when you thought this was either going to be the last big deal or maybe the first small one, it looks like it's going to be, maybe it won't be the last big deal, but maybe it'll be the next big deal, because I think that 6 years is savvy, and it shows the power, yeah, of the Big Ten brand. You know, the Pac-10's only going to make about $250 million in all of its 2019 deal. You know, so here this is a couple years ahead of that. So there's a lot going on here.
There's also digital rights. What are your thoughts on digital rights as to whether they should be kept in-house or else? Is it something, you know, which way do you think in this current marketplace, Steve, can an entity like the Big Ten make more money, keeping it in-house or selling it?
I think selling it, just because nobody keeps their in-house stuff, say, for sports properties kind of things. Okay. Nobody does that. You know, Michigan State did its own and now has gone to Fox, and Villanova's gone to Fox, and Georgetown's gone to Fox to do those sports rights kind of things for the broadcast networks. So my sense is that, you know, maybe a network has the ability to keep it in. Maybe the Pac-10 has done its several iterations of channels that it has, but I wouldn't be surprised that it happened either way, but I think there might be more money just thinking about that model that they do with broadcasts like radio networks and things, that everybody kind of outsources them. There was only a few people that had their own before, and it seems to work. I mean, it makes sense financially, and that's what they're looking for, because there was an article in USA Today earlier this week about how college athletics is making more money, but they're also out, you know, the top programs are outspending more than they ever done before. So they're going to try to find every revenue stream they can.
And by the way, I think a lot of people forget the component of the Big Ten network in this, because when they start adding up rights, I think this contract would be $17.83 million per school. You then add in the $7 to $10 million per school they're going to get from the Big Ten network. Now you're up over 25 and haven't even done the other part yet per school.
Exactly.
All right. There's been also a trend. It's not a big trend. I mean, I think it's like they say it's less than 5%. But Penn State basketball ended up in this boat three times this year, where the game was done by the announcers in Charlotte, two Nebraska games and the Northwestern game. Steve, what's your thought on that? Because the blue-white game, and I know, and I can tell you firsthand from the hockey games I worked this year, actually, as the producer and director were in Chicago and we were on site. But this was the reverse. They had the guys announcing the game, Adam Amin and Craig Robinson, from Charlotte. What is your thought on that?
I think as a viewer, I know the difference, and I feel less served. I feel like they are, you know, cheaping out on giving me a good broadcast, because I know they're seeing what I'm seeing on the screen, and that's it. Maybe they've got a couple more video feeds that they're able to see, depending on how it's set up. But I feel like there is a disservice to game sound canned. I know it's a money saving thing. We had Dave Revson on campus in the College of Communications earlier this week, and he talked about how the Big Ten Network does it, and or how he's seen it done at ESPN as well. And they do it differently. Each of the networks, and you probably have more insight than this because you've seen it happen, they do it a little differently. My understanding is that actually the Big Ten Network stuff, because of the fiber they ran when the Big Ten Network came in with all its schools, like those broadcasts actually feel a little different when somebody's not there for some other sporting events than the ESPN stuff does, because it's who's on site and where the truck is, and that matters from each one. But it doesn't really matter to me as a viewer either way. I think I do know, and I think fans know, not all of them, but I think enough know that, geez, they're just doing what I could do here in my living room. I mean, it's more complicated than that, but there's that feel. And I think that's kind of an insult to the fans in a way.
You know what's interesting is you talk about the ambiance of it. You know what's actually missing ambiance-wise? Besides, obviously, the announcers being able to see the full deal in front of them. Those are actually the announcer mics that actually make up for the announcer, actually make up, you know, that are in that different upper location because of where they're sitting.
Yeah, it gives you a depth of sound. You know, whether they're upper level or whether they're just, you know, sitting on the floor, that mic picks up a little bit more. Like, you can feel a little more background noise. They just sound kind of canned when there's nobody there in person, and you can tell the difference in that. And it's, you know, you pay for a ticket to see it live, but you're also paying your cable bill to see it in person, so right. To see it on TV, so you know you're just not getting what you paid for in some instances.
All right, Steve, we're going to keep you over into the next hour if that's okay, because we have a lot more to cover here on television rights, the money being paid to the Big Ten network, to the Big Ten, where now it looks like they've got it secure with Fox, FS1. They already have the Big Ten Network. That's a deal that extends it into the 2030s. BTN does. Well, right now it's probably between 25 and 27 million per school per year now, with the other half of the rights still to come. So we're going to keep Steve Sampson over into the next half hour. This will allow us to take a break, come back quickly, go to the news, then come back with more of Steve Sampson on media and sports, what you consume, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth.
The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, more with Steve Samsel on media rights and money. Kevin hates this topic, but it's what we see. It's what we watch.
I really agree with you guys, though. I don't like the games that ESPN... Now, maybe it's because I look at it differently and watch it differently.
No.
I didn't like it.
I agree with you.
I didn't like the canned outside of the... I don't like it when they do it for Formula One, either.
But you know what? We don't think your game is a big deal to us.
That's another good point.
That, to me, is the message it sends. Like, yeah, it's not big enough for us to go to.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. I don't really know much about Conor McGregor. He's in UFC, but one day you retire, the next day you're back. I don't know. Okay.
Is there such a thing as a one-day retirement or a temporary retirement?
Well, you're sitting there, aren't you?
That's an excellent point. You make a valid comparison there, Mr. Jones.
All right, it's great. Are you playing golf with us in 2 weeks?
I don't know.
You don't know? You have to check with your agent? What?
Listen, I've got a very busy schedule. I'm going to try and see if I can sneak some time in for you, Steve.
What?
I'll let you know coming up shortly.
You're telling me you've got a busy schedule.
I've got a very busy schedule, yeah.
You're telling me that.
Well, you're in the off season. Don't sit there and like, this isn't even baseball yet. This is the off season for you. If there's ever an off season, this is it.
Oh, I'm sorry, but the other 10 months don't. I'm a little busy.
The other 10 months, you get a little hectic. I will grant you that.
And by the way, I want to throw something at everybody. We got approved quickly on this, which is great. We will be at the U.S. Open Golf Championship at Oakmont.
Oh, that's awesome.
We're going to do the show Wednesday, June 15th there at Oakmont. Now, you're saying, well, why don't you do it during the tournament? During the tournament, they're all out playing. I mean, you have a chunk of the field out there a long period of time. Through experience, we've discovered we can give you a show that has a wide variety of players on it by going to the practice rounds, where they really do regulate when the guy practices, when they can get him into the interview room, when we can talk to them, so forth. That's why we elect to do it this way, because that way you'll hear more players on there. I know Jennifer Wakeman wants to hear Adam Scott on the show. And we'll do what we can to get him. I think that would be great. But that's how we're going to approach it. So we have the Phillies on the 14th. Tuesday the 14th, we're going to have a Phillies game. No show. That's why we've opted to do the show on the 15th at Oakmont. Okay. So I bring Steve Samsel back in, who patiently has waited through all this. Steve, one of the areas we were talking about, various areas, but media has changed a lot. Take you back 5 years. what trend did you see coming? And then what trend did surprise you as to what we've seen 5 years later?
Let me go forward first, because I can't remember backward quite well what I would have been thinking. I can't remember
the beginning of the show. So go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can remember what I thought for sure was going to happen. I think nostalgia kind of stuff. I mean, even maybe I thought back that they're going to try to find ways to make, and I think it's maybe not so much a sports media, but a sports presentation thing. You know, there's been so much throwback games, branding kind of things, and all of that. And that same thing this week in USA Today, they talked about, the article was about how the monetization of college football and basketball isn't to the level of pro football and pro basketball, which kind of makes sense because they're college sports. But it scares me to think about this generation of sports marketers and publicists and folks in business who are educating, and they're going to try to monetize my college sports even more, and I'm not going to be able to tell the difference between a college game day event in the stadium and an NFL game day in the stadium. And that piece is kind of scary. But going forward, I think with that stadium piece, I think what we may see eventually, and it kind of gets to the announcer list things, is this challenge of, if every game is on TV, why am I going to go? Which then gets the pull of, you know, what we're presenting. But I wouldn't be surprised in a few years to see some sports, and I don't know which ones exactly, maybe feel a little bit more like arena sports, or, you know, not Bowling for Dollars probably, or studio wrestling exactly, but it's going to feel like a made-for-TV event, even in the regular season, I think, in some instances.
When you look at the cord-cutting effect, has that surprised you at all, the cord-cutting effect that we've seen, and what has that done to cable people who 10 years ago thought they had it made?
Well, it's lost a lot of cable people jobs in the past year, and ESPN for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was the power of cable, was this two-revenue stream model. They're going to take my cable bill that I'm paying. They're going to take, you know, those two revenue streams, and they're going to be able to have rights. That's why the Final Four was on TBS this year. That was what that deal was signed for a few years ago. And if TBS was going to pitch in money, they wanted to be able to have that championship game on cable because they were making it possible because they had all this money from the advertisers and the revenue from the cable bill. And I'm surprised by how much it's dropped off, but yeah, there's such an ease to access the stuff with streaming. You know, we were traveling in the fall, coming back from, I think it was Penn State playing at Northwestern, you know, and I could pull up my phone and check out the Steelers game while we're waiting there, you know, instead of having to sit in the hotel bar or something like that, or someplace you could just sit in the waiting area at the airport, and there it is streaming. So I think it's become so easy to cut your cord and still get access. And initially ESPN seemed like it was going to fight that, and I think they need to, and for that's their model. But now with Sling and other ways to get access and get their programs out there, they've also got to embrace it. You know, on one hand, say, no, that's not who we are. And on the other hand, say, okay, but we got to get our content out there. And the numbers have really dropped in terms of, I mean, they're off a lot of subscribers.
You and I both know that the NFL is the proverbial money tree. They usually seem to take the lead on a lot of these things. You mentioned earlier one of the contracts that will be up, by the way, right before the Big Ten's will be the Fox contract with the NFL in 2022. What kind of importance do you put to the fact that the NFL did a streaming deal already for their games after the experiment they had last year with the one game with Detroit in London?
Yeah, I think there's more to come, and I guess what was most surprising about that is if you took what the contracts are worth and, you know, you break it out on a per game basis, whatever that multi-million dollar number is, I don't remember off the top of my head, that's basically what they paid for it. I mean, that was what they paid to be able to have the rights to broadcast it online. So it's not like it's going to be any less, you know, any more efficient for somebody to try to do it, or they're going to get a deal. They're still going to pay the going rate for an NFL game, and they're going to have to figure out a way to monetize it. But by all accounts, it went well. And I think there's going to be more of that to come too. There's going to be a home for, I think, the Thursday night package. They still have the digital rights for that. They haven't gotten rid of, I think. Wow. So that's to come. So I think more. I think my cable will be gone in a few years, and I think a lot of people will just be able to find whatever they want, and it'll be interesting to see what we'll lose maybe in all that, or maybe some other networks. Some of the networks that you get bundled now that you don't watch, or maybe you catch when you're flipping by if you're a Home and Garden TV person or something like that, or those other ones that are there and taking up a piece of your bill, I think those are the ones who have to worry about their existence probably more so than the sports things in some ways.
Have you been blown away by the numbers we've seen the last 3 or 4 years on rights?
I was blown away this week with the Big Ten stuff, really. I mean, I guess I didn't think it would drop off and wouldn't be, you know, wouldn't be valuable. But that just seems like a big number for a piece of it, and there's still more to come. So, yeah, I'm surprised that there's always money out there. And, again, it's somebody's job to make money and raise money. But I just don't know where it drops off at. And I guess the corresponding drop-off, if you think about it a little bit, is people, you know. But with Fox Sports making cuts, with ESPN making cuts, you know, it's kind of a give and take. If you're going to pull that rope on one side and get more money, you're probably going to let go of people doing some broadcasts and do it remotely on the other end of the rope.
Next question. This one's difficult, but it's a speculation question. Obviously, over the last couple of years, you've seen a more, let's use the word, progressive feel from the NCAA on student-athletes that passed a stipend, food, being more liberal now with getting parents and guardians having their trips paid for recruiting, so forth. Do these numbers put more pressure on the NCAA when it comes to the student-athlete, even though the numbers should suggest that it's made it easier for athletic departments to pay all their bills?
Yeah, I think they make it tougher. I mean, I think that the NCAA, the conferences, and the individual schools, because I think it's a pretty easy argument to make that, you know, what's the benefit for the student athlete in some of this stuff? And I fully believe it is the scholarship and the opportunity and whatever else. But I think
right. You
can look at organizations adding, you know, staff to do certain things, or departments growing, you know, to do certain things. And it's all coming off of maybe sometimes, or at least a piece of it's coming off of broadcast rights money. You know, certainly here at Penn State, you know, they put money back in to the Morgan Center for academic services and things like that.
Right.
But I think any place you can look at and you say, okay, School X, you made $35 million this year. Where did that go? And you certainly have to have the infrastructure to make the games happen and all that. But I think at most places you see a creep in terms of staff sizes as well that aren't necessarily folks that are related specifically to a team or things like that. That, you know, then it becomes a little bit more pressure. Somebody's going to come back and say, "What are you doing with these kids? Okay. And are you taking advantage of them?"
One final question. I know I've held you over, so thanks a lot for doing this. And the final question is this. What do you think between the Big Ten and the SEC are well positioned? What has this done to the ACC, the Big 12, and even some ways the Pac-12? Has this created an economic inequality between those two conferences and the other three?
Because
the ACC, right, they can't get their own network going. Nobody seems to be able to do it except the SEC and the Big Ten.
Yeah, no, I think there was a little bit of inequality, and I think early this week it got a little bit more when this deal came out for the Big Ten, and I don't see that turning back much. I mean, I think the Pac-12 has a nice model, but it's still not as valuable in some ways. It was just proven this week. It's not as valuable as the Big Ten's is to some people. So, yeah, there's an inequality there, and then as prices and things creep up and you're paying more and you got to build a facility and you got to pay for the extras above and beyond for things like that, and you got to pay for the parents to travel. You know, the haves are going to keep having,
right?
And the have-nots are going to really be pressed to keep up. And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked in another decade that we see some more, you know, conference tweaking and things like that, just because only some people are going to be able to survive at a certain level at some point.
Yeah, because the Pac-12 network, the way it's done through Dish, is a mess.
Yeah.
I mean, you had the tournament was at MGM, at the MGM Arena in Las Vegas, and the players would be done, and if the game was on the Pac-12 network, they couldn't go back to the hotel and watch it.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's just, they just aren't as pervasive in some ways as the others, and I think those brands between the Big Ten and the SEC, and then they just put that parlays into what happens on the field and on the court, and I think things like Villanova in basketball, it might not be a rarity, it's a little different in basketball, but football always drives the bus, and that money is what drives the sports and college football. So I think there is going to be more pressure, and it'll be interesting to see when that pressure is applied, you know, who benefits from it and who doesn't.
Steve, an absolute pleasure. I know we held you over, but thanks a lot for doing that, and always appreciate everything you do.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Steve Samsel, media analyst, for joining us and talking about a wide variety of topics, and of course including the first half of the Big Ten deal evidently going to Fox and Fox Sports One. We will come back. We'll talk about that in a moment, and we'll wrap things up here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
His name was Prince Rogers Nelson. He was 57 years old. He's going to turn 58 in June. He passed away today at the age of 57. Don't know the cause of death. And I'm sure it is. He was just 57 years old, considered to be a musical genius, an icon in the business, seven-time Grammy Award winner, also won an Academy Award. Said he'd been sick for the last couple of weeks. His plane, he was going to have to, I think, to do a concert, I want to say, in Atlanta. And turn the plane around because he wasn't feeling well. He made an appearance on Saturday night in Paisley Park, which is just west of Minneapolis, and right there in the burbs. And, yeah, said, hold off on the prayers. And it turned out that he passed away today, the age of 57. They say he'd gone to the pharmacy four times the last couple of weeks, and now they're trying to find out exactly what he was taking at the time, too. So maybe to give them some clues. All right. The TV interview with Steve Samsel, obviously this is going to benefit Penn State athletics. It's one of the reasons that this is an important subject that I discuss all the time. For all of you who love wrestling, you love women's volleyball, whatever, you don't have to just be a lover of football and basketball. This money benefits everybody across the board. They may not show those events on TV very often, but it benefits them. It allows them to pay for the scholarships that you see. If they can somehow get between $40 and $45 million per school when it's all said and done, that's what it's going to be all about on this particular level. They've taken a big step with the six-year, $1.5 billion deal that they have not signed yet and they have not officially announced yet, but it's been obviously somebody leaked the story. And because they wanted to leak the story, believe me, that this is what they've done. Fox needs the programming because they need a signature college event or a series of events and a season in college that increases their profile in sports on over-the-air Fox, and more importantly to them, gives them a base of signature programming in college football on Fox Sports 1. And it's going to be 25 football games on Fox One, 50 school games on Fox and Fox Sports One. You knew Fox had the money, $250 million per year for each school. That's $17.83 million. Now you add in the $8 to $10 million a year from the Big Ten Network, which is locked in, and that's locked in for the next. I want to say there's still another 16 years to go on that deal. 16 or 17 more years to go. So that's locked in. So now we're talking between 20 and 27 million per school, and the other half of the rights have not been sold yet. But that's what this means. And if you love Penn State wrestling, this is part of the stability of the program. This Penn State wrestling, and I've said this many times, but for some reason, I think people see sellouts and rec hall and go, oh, that can't be possible. Well, they're not charging a lot of money. And they're not charging anything. There's no radio rights. There's no TV rights. Nothing, okay? So Penn State wrestling cannot sustain itself. It loses money. I think, what was the number this year? I said it was, they lost, what, $750,000 this year? Something like that. And that's selling out. But it's the money for football, stadium, what you do, Nittany Lion Club, basketball, same story. Basketball is a TV contract. Basketball is a radio contract. Football is a TV contract. Football is a radio contract. The radio contract for football and men's basketball is an eight-figure deal with Learfield. Okay? It's not small. But this is how you're able to have over 800 student athletes on scholarship. That's how it happens. They're getting more money than ever out of this. Kevin doesn't like the money part, which I understand. I mean, you know, it kind of takes away from the fantasy of this whole thing. But I think that all that was ripped away years ago. Don't you, Kev?
Yeah, about the same time as the first player I liked left the team.
Who was that?
It would probably have to be Rod Woodson. For me, anyway. Okay. I mean, for me personally, that was when...
Yeah, but didn't... Okay, let's flip it around, though. Were you happy when the Phillies signed Pete Rose?
See, that's when I started becoming a Phillies fan, so I didn't really think of him as a Red. To me, he was... And I know he was a Red. I get that. But because of being a Phillies fan at that point, I only thought of him as a Philly because I really didn't know him as a Red. But I understand where you're coming from. My age had a lot to do with it at that time.
All right. No, I understand.
By the way, earlier you mentioned Prince. He actually, we mentioned earlier, did the halftime of the Super Bowl in 07. But he actually wrote a song in 2010 for the NFC Championship game when he was watching the Vikings and New Orleans Saints. He wrote a fight song called Purple and Gold for the Vikings while he was getting ready to watch that game.
Well, he played basketball in high school, and he was a season ticket holder for the Timberwolves, season ticket holder for the Minnesota Lynx, loved the Vikings. He loved his home area. He loved Minneapolis.